Hello, Aries, and welcome to Be Next, the 2025-26 Astrology Studio reading for Aries. Thank you for joining me. This reading is applicable for all of those with the Sun in Aries, Aries Rising, and Aries Moon, as you prefer. I think also, given that it's the sign Aries, it's the kind of thing we should all know about, since we are going to find out how influential the sign Aries is as the astrology of the spring of 2025 through the spring of 2026 develops. And as I've said many times, I'm sure you've read in my descriptions and pitches and possibly even in The Awakening, the 2025 annual reading for Planet Waves, this is absolutely unusual, extraordinary, unbelievable astrology that has never happened anything like this. Well, not really. This is an absolutely unique pattern in all of the history of astrology. It is so unusual that Kirsty Melto and I went back to the year 1 BC, before you were born, to find precedents for this astrology. Now, there are periods where there's a big flare-up in Aries. It happens periodically. Well, one of the things happening in Aries over the next two to three years has happened a total of four times since 1 BC, but never in quite the way that it is happening now. And so what this means is that, as I've described, you know, with that cool photo with the pasture one way and the door and the stairway and all that in the next card, you have your options open. That's really what that means. And it also is telling me that you're going to be feeling, and may already be feeling, kind of a very unusual sense of this is an important time in your life, and it is a very important time in your life. I will say that much. At least it does not matter how old you are. If you've got a child who has a strong Aries signature in their chart, it might be a good time to look at their chart. It will be a monumental time in their lives as well. And this is often in ways that adults really don't understand and don't know how to handle. But for those of us of, let's say, decision-making age, of age where we are still involved in some kind of a conscious maturing process, or willing to learn and to grow, which is what astrology is all about. It's about stretching your potential. It's about becoming more fully and wholly who you are, a process of self-actualization. It's a great time. And one of the reasons why this astrology is so important for everyone is because for everyone, Aries is the sign of self-actualization. And so if there's one astrology studio reading in the whole kind of 14-year history of the project that is for everyone, this is the one, because Aries is so intimately involved in the experience of self-awareness, of self-becoming, of engaging one's maturity process, and I think more than anything, of having the courage and the confidence to take action and taking action. Without Aries, there's absolutely nothing, right? The concept, and by this I mean the ideas that are contained in Aries. Without the ideas that are contained in Aries, and without the planet Mars, there is no action taken. There is no movement forward. There is no initiative. And so what Aries contains, and Mars, which rules Aries, contains, are all of those expressions of forward motion, of initiative, of having, you know, focusing the confidence to do what you came here to do. Now, I say all this recognizing that we live in woefully hopeless times. This is a very difficult time for anyone to have a sense of a better future than exists now. And this is especially true for young people who are overwhelmed with the negativity of the world, and not only with the negativity, but with this sense of things getting worse and worse all the time, collectively for society, and many individuals are struggling profoundly. There are people who are absolutely isolated and lonely. This includes both men and women. It includes people of a wide diversity of age ranges. It used to just be the elderly who were isolated and lonely, and now you have many young people, people in their 20s and 30s and 40s who are not able to have intimate relationships. They've never had an intimate relationships. More and more people are not having any form of sex. A highly politicized environment that contains sexual concepts, which also therefore includes relational concepts, since you can't have sex without some form of a relationship. May not be the world's greatest love affair or something you make a movie about, but there has to be a relationship of some kind between two people in order for there to be a sexual experience. So I think that these are really one concept, one idea. These are the more I read and the more I hear from people, profoundly alienated times where people have just basically been pushed into an isolated and lonely corner by digital technology. And so I realize this is not exactly the most optimistic time in history, and it is certainly not a time to have hope for the future. But what this is a time to do is to act on your future, act on your growth, act on your self-becoming and your actualization as a means of activating your own possibilities, as a means of going forward. And I think it's important, given the dismal state of the world and the sense that we have of living in a very, very precarious system. You know, there's just always this sense that things are going to collapse, and it's no longer a fantasy. That the systems that were set up to serve people are now used almost exclusively to abuse people and to be abused. There's very little actual service going on. And we know that as a result of this exploitation, that it is possible that things will fall apart. However, your individual dharma, your individual calling, your necessities of growth and the things that you were called to this planet at this time to do remain in existence. They remain true. They remain important and necessary, and your life continues to be an important thing to you. There's nothing else that should be more important to you than your life, because once you have that in order, and once you've learned how to take care of yourself, and once you've learned how to focus your growth and your evolution, then you get more opportunities to participate. And it's often the participation that creates the growth. However, I think that in my view, you know, as someone who's counseled people for many years and has successfully gone through therapy process, it really helps to know where you stand with yourself and to have worked out your emotional issues. That's a very important thing, and it shows up as a profoundly important matter for Aries when we get to the point of talking about Mars retrograde in your sign, right, in Cancer rather, on the cardinal cross. And I'm going to just make sure that I've got that drawn into this chart well enough. And I'm picking up some noise. I live like in the only part of town where there's anything going on. I was about to start, and the fire engines were on my block. I went upstairs and got my portable scanner to listen to yet another fire alarm going off for absolutely no reason. All right, so the emotional growth piece and the settling into yourself, piece. Is crucial, and that is your astrology has a lot to say about that, and I will get to that. And this is true for all of us. I'm about to turn 61, And when I look back on my life, I've had a pretty good life. I've had many challenges. I have often risen to those challenges. But when I think about the one thing that has held me back the most, it has been the processing of the emotional material that my family heaped on me. The things they said about me that weren't true, the ways that I was made to feel. We are all made to feel certain ways about ourselves. And I do my thing at this time in my life, and yet at the same time, I think I might have expressed my potential a lot more fully if I had been able to work through emotional issues. And look, I started therapy in my late 20s, a pretty good time to start therapy. I am hearing a noise, and I have now finally have a real video video program, and I'm going to see what I can do to inquire how long that's going to be around and to stop it. So I'll be back with you in a digital instant. Okay, a digital instant has gone by. This is I live next to the LGBTQIA center, and they are obsessed with security. They're the burglar alarm people that are there constantly. So there may be one more bout of that drilling. So what I was saying is that, speaking for myself, having lived an illustrious life, emotional hangups, I think, have cost me the most in terms of time and energy and success. And working that out is very much indicated in your chart. I will get to that shortly. But before I do, what I'm suggesting is that we no longer have the context framing for how to understand emotional working out. Pretty much everything has been externalized. This is a function of the digital environment. And to work anything out emotionally, you need to have a sense of your own interior space. And all winter long, now here I'm recording on the 26th of February, and for quite a ways into the spring, Mars continues to point you into your interior space. So, introduction part two is that we are heading into this absolutely extraordinary, unreal, but imminent Aries astrology. Currently, right now, the Pisces grouping is getting a lot of news. That's going to become the Aries group very soon, as Saturn and Neptune enter your sign. I'm going to go over these things all one at a time and talk about the character formation material that that is likely to, you know, come up for you. There's a reason I am describing all of this Aries as options and as potential, and not like, you know, gyrating and jumping up and down and saying how incredible this is going to be for you. One thing I've learned, and I from doing public astrology my entire career, which means that I have, in parallel, I have worked with individuals through most of the 30 years I've been doing this, but I've always been engaging with the public through horoscope columns, articles, and this kind of public reading. The studio series is what I would call a public reading. But I'm good at it, so I can bring it in. And I've learned not to hype up the astrology, not to talk about how absolutely fantastic this is going to be, because there are going to be a wide diversity of experiences here. And for anyone with a strong Aries signature, meaning Sun, Moon, Rising, and Chiron, including Chiron return, and I'm going to do a special reading devoted to the Aries Chiron return and the Aries Saturn return, i.e. Chiron return for people with Chiron and Aries, Saturn return for people with Saturn and Aries. There is so much astrology that it is impossible to characterize how it will be generally, except to say, well, you have options, and there's going to be increase in bandwidth consumption, in activity, in experience, in people, and in your feeling some enhanced sense of your own presence. So I am playing down somewhat the nature of this astrology. By that, I mean that I'm not going to talk about how amazing it is, when in fact it could be freaking absolutely amazing. And when it's possible that, you know, when people have Neptune and Saturn show up in their life, they have a lot of struggles. But then in that case, as the astrologer, my responsibility when there are challenges and struggles is to help you by providing as much perspective and information as I can, contextualized, not just random information, to give you some tools that, if you want them, that will help you sort out what you're going through. So let's go to the charts. Let's go to the first. I've got several charts here. And the first one I want to show you is the chart for when the sun enters your sign on the equinox. I'm not sure exactly what day and time. I don't have it on this chart. I just have it says equinox 2025 to give you a sense of how much energy there is, and also to give you a sense of the way things are positioned throughout your solar. Throughout your solar return. So let's look at what first. Let's look at what's in Pisces at the time of the equinox. Equinox is when the sun enters Aries. That's the vernal or spring northern hemisphere spring equinox. There's a lot going on in Pisces. For you, Pisces is the 12th place. There is. The 12th place, the place before yours. The 12th is the place before any reference sign. If we're talking about the sign Gemini, then the 12th place is Taurus. If we're talking about Aries, the 12th place is Pisces. So this is your 12th place. And that is a region of consciousness where things are kind of misty and hidden, and where you may not have an easy access into awareness of what is going on. It's quite challenging to address the 12th house. It is outside of ordinary consciousness, and you have a lot in there. And this is reminding you that you have had a lot of material in the 12th house for a long time. And the slow movers in the 12th are Neptune. That's been there since 2011. Saturn since about 2013, about 2 years on Saturn. About 14 years on Neptune, and then Nessus. I think Nessus goes in around 2013. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Nessus is a very slow mover right now, and it's been there for a long time. So that's a lot of interior pressure that feels like emotional currents moving around, but you can't really give it a name. It may be bleeding through in your dreams. It may be distracting you, and it may be a powerful source of creativity. Now, other objects in Pisces are the relatively recent arrival of Ceres. I think that was like this week, reference being the last week of February. And the nodes just entered Pisces, but they're coming from this direction. The nodes move backwards. And that means there's going to be some eclipses on the Pisces Virgo axis, and it also which shakes things up. It creates inner disturbance, which creates inner awareness. And remember that in my analysis of the digital conditions, which are the prevailing spiritual conditions of our day, most people have no concept of their inner experience. There's no real concept of the inner life. It is some very few highly sensitive people who are aware of their inner life, who are sensitive to their inner being, And then also older people who have, you know, who have spent a lot of time in nature and reading books and aware of their growth and who have participated in spiritual practice and have not grown up completely exposed to extroverting, completely inside-out making digital conditions. So there are several major important things that are calling you inward. And while we're on this topic, I want to, you know, there that stuff is there now, and it's going to be moving in and out. These planets, Neptune and Saturn, are going to go into Aries. They're going to come back into Pisces, and they're going to go back into Aries. We'll get there. So there is this kind of transition going on from the unmanifest in Pisces into the manifest in Aries for you, into the deep unconscious of Pisces, the land of dreams and of ayahuasca trips and all things like that. The 12th is about meditation. It's about experiences on entheogenic substances. It's about deep sexual experiences, which can have that. I hope people still have this experience of, you know, you wake up in the morning and it all felt like a dream. You know, these, stunningly beautiful erotic experiences that take place like between like midnight and 4 a.m. and then you like wake up at 7:30 and you're like, whoa, did that even happen? Well, the 12th house is about the pleasures of the bed, and that's from Vedic astrology, and that's what is meant. It is the dreamlike quality of those pleasures of the bed that are described by the 12th house, and especially by Pisces. Just while we're on the subject of how a house here, houses are all they represent a confluence of events that all kind of weave together. And the key to understanding a house is to understand what the confluence is, what the field of awareness that weaves things together is. Okay, so there's going to be a lot of moving in and out of this unconscious into the fully conscious. Venus is doing it. You can see Venus is retrograde. Venus is now in Aries. It was just in Pisces. It's going to go back into Pisces and back into Aries. Mercury's retrograde in this chart on this date, at the end of the month, 21st, in early Aries. It's going to go back into Pisces and then back into Aries. So there's a lot of things going back and forth over the Pisces-Aries line. This is the theme of the next 2 years for you, is things going back and forth over the Pisces-Aries line. And so there's a lot of moving from the unmanifest into the manifest, go back into the other world. You're world walking. I mean, this is when we say shamanism. You know, this is like everyone likes to say, I'm a shaman. I'm going to get a sign hanging out on the post outside my office. Shaman. Okay. What actually, one thing that is absolutely shamanistic, isn't that funny, is the ability to walk between the worlds at the same time, to have a foot in the land of the living and a foot in the land of the dead, or a foot in the land of the unconscious and the fully conscious, or a foot in the land of the collective and the individual. This is really, really a beautiful explanation of the Pisces-Aries line, because Pisces is very much about the collective, and Aries is very much about the individual. And the imaginary line that defines them, a term that you've heard me use many times. Here's the closest thing to a ruler I can find. The Aries point is this imaginary line that divides Pisces and Aries, and this is one of the biggest taps into mass public consciousness that exists in all of astrology. And so one of the possibilities of this astrology, depending on who you are, depending on what you do, depending on what your life orientation is, and even for some people who do not have any sense of being any more public of a person than like post to Facebook, there's some there is going to be some result of all of this activity on the Aries point over and over again. I mean, the world is going to go wild in ways I cannot even imagine. But I know it from 30 years of studying events, and my careful focus on the Aries point goes back to 9/11. And so for you personally, there is likely to be this sense of like opening into this whole new space possible. It is also possible for the ego to kind of try to plaster you in against all of that. And one of the things I can say is when the astrology is this like beautiful and this deep, the thing to do is to go with it and let yourself be open. And I realize one of the things we're living in is a time with a lot of free floating anxiety, a lot of free floating, like, will I live and why do all these young people around me have cancer and what is going to happen? And, tremendous time of free floating, generalized anxiety then finds it cathexes onto individual things, and it is not pleasant. And so when the 12th house is involved, that is, there is a lot of doing the work to address your fears, doing the spiritual work, which is much of what spiritual work is, to address your fear. Now let's, while we're in this kind of watery territory of like Pisces morphing into Aries and back and forth, and Venus is a planet that's associated with Pisces, it's exalted. Neptune is a planet that's associated with Pisces, it's a modern ruler of Pisces. Let's look at I may want to get a better chart here. I want to talk about Mars retrograde. And the reason why Mars retrograde is so important for you to have a grasp on. What color Sharpie is going to come up here? All right, purple. That's not bad. Why it is so important to have a grasp on is because Mars is the ruler, the classical ruler of Aries. And so, like where Mars goes, you go. And by that, I mean in consciousness, and it can even describe a certain physical locations. All right, so this is the full chart. I'm going to look at, this is one of my hand-drawn numbers. This is the one that I used for the awakening. I've decided not to make new charts for every reading this year. I'm going to just use the awakening charts because the charts go out to 2026 and all that. I mean, this takes a long time to write these charts up. It's very complicated to do this, to get all of this data into one place. So we were just talking about this region with Saturn and Neptune going back and forth across this the solar ascendant or your whole sign ascendant, and it'd be a good time to really get a look at your chart, like at your actual chart. But when we go down to the bottom of the chart, when we go down to the fourth house, houses go 12, 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth place is security, sense of safety, early childhood experiences, and your home, and your emotional grounding, and your sense of emotional well-being, So it has a lot to do with your sense of belonging, and it has a lot to do with your sense of whether you feel safe being where you are and in the emotional mind frame that you are in. And what happened in late 2024 is that all through October, November, Mars of 24. Mars moved through Cancer and out into Leo. Let me just pull this up a little bit so that it's more sort of toward the center of your screen. And I'll provide this chart. And Mars went out to about 6 degrees of Leo, and then it's retrograded back into Cancer. And right now it is sitting at about, it's gestation retrograde direct about 3 days ago. Station direct, the retrograde's over. It's station direct about 3 days ago at about 17 and a half Cancer. And now it's moving back into Leo. And so what is likely to have happened and to be happening is that there's a lot of confrontation with insecurities when you've got something like Mars in the fourth place, fourth house, especially when the fourth house has a sensitive, which your fourth place does. And remember that this chart is the chart for the sign, not your natal chart, but the chart for the sign easily gets you halfway to where you want to be on your natal chart. It's that good. I mean, I have gone way deep into astrology. I could not use and trust the solar chart enough if it didn't really work. I would have abandoned it long ago. It is so perfect, so beautiful, that it gets you at least half the way to understanding your your astrology. And then the natal chart opens up a whole new realm of experience and direct personal karma. But continuing on this thread, so the events of late 2024 are important because they were like the setup. And by late 24, I really mean October and November. Then Mars is in, by like late November, Mars is in Leo. And that, Leo is your fifth place. And that is summoning your creative power and your sense of self as a person who is able to take the risk of being yourself and doing what you want to do. It's very similar to Aries. It is a very strong self-presence going on in Leo. And your ruling planet, your planet Mars going out into Leo in December and stationing retrograde is sending you signals about your need to be more expressive. And then it goes back into Cancer, where it's spent most of the year, very early January, Mars goes into Cancer. Spent most of the year there saying, well, you have to address emotional insecurities and emotional crisis to be able to be able to access and tap your creativity. Okay, they're drilling through the wall again with a very big drill. The guy's quite nice, named Ron. And he said it's going to take about 2 minutes. I don't know how annoying this is, but I'm going to try to keep you entertained and distracted for the 2 minutes. And it's a bank. It's a former bank. The LGBTQ Center is in a former bank. And it reminds me of the you know, nobody asked why I hang the Jack of Hearts from my microphone. But those who know who the Jack of Hearts is will know the Bob Dylan line, the drilling in the wall kept up, but no one seemed to pay it any mind. So the message of this combination of ruling planet Mars, going into the fifth, wanting dynamic, expressive, creative power, and you want to identify with your creative work, and then going back into Cancer is saying you've got to deal with your insecurities. Yes, you deal with them through your art, but you also deal with your insecurities by confronting them as a conscious choice. And so rather than, you know, wait for disaster to ensue or wait till you get to the point where you're paralyzed by something, it really helps to be doing the emotional work and to be addressing your emotional insecurities and your fears as a conscious act of will, as an understood necessity of maturity. Just like following the calling to do what you feel called to do as an artist is an act of maturity. So be aware that this is going on. And I don't know exactly when Mars gets back into Leo. Let's find that out. But I would say this, that rather than waiting for Mars to get back into Leo, take advantage of the fact that, I'm working on this little ancient MacBook Air that runs my astrology program, which stopped getting updated in 2019 because the company went out of business. Mars returns to Leo April 17th. So for the duration of the sun's transit through Aries, your solar return series, Mars is in Cancer. And what I'm suggesting is, yes, I know that's uncomfortable. And it may be describing a household situation that you have to in some way address. You have to somehow deal with a situation with a partner, a situation with housemates, situation with possibly parents in your home, situation with children. It is definitely emotionally itchy and scratchy. It is definitely a emotionally challenging situation. But stay with yourself. If this were some planet other than Mars, we could say, well, all right. I mean, it's like this kind of transient thing passing through your life. Maybe it's Mercury going retrograde in Leo and going into Cancer. Oh, okay, that's nice. That's kind of a quick moving situation. But when it's your planet, when it's Mars, in the case of all things Aries, this is suggesting that this is about some thing happening to you and for you. This is the time is ripe for certain karma to manifest, to be addressed now. It's the chart always describes some kind of environmental condition meeting an internal situation. So I think I made my point here. And I would add one more thing. We're talking about territory that is best addressed in therapy. And I am starting to think that therapy is kind of gone. I mean, there are some people working as therapists, but, who are these people? Are they old enough? Are they wise enough? I would not want to work with any therapist who is any form of a digital native. I'm sorry if you're a young therapist, and if you are, and you're listening and you feel you're qualified, reach out to me. I'm looking for people to refer people to. I would do it, but I've got so many other things that I am doing, but I still do reading. So you want an old therapist. You want a therapist who's got their grounding in literacy, who's read and worked and who's studied and has a very strong sense of who they are on the inside and has done a lot of their work on the inside. But in any event, if you are feeling emotionally challenged, don't think you have to go through this alone. Reach out. Ask someone for their assistance. Ask someone for their feedback. And no one who's got too high of a stake in your outcome. That's the beauty of a therapist, is that you cultivate trust with someone who has no stake in your outcome. Okay, drilling in the wall. It's keeping up, but it's quieter. It's quieter coming in from the inside. They're drilling through internal materials. Eventually, they're going to hit rock. It's a bag wall. The wall's like really friggin' thick. All right, moving right along. So imagine that there is a parallel between, and this is how you also know you're reading astrology. We've got an important planet, Mars, moving from water to fire to water to fire. Ah, and we've got four planets up around here moving from water to fire to water to fire. They are Mercury going from Pisces, Aries. That's what a retrograde is. They are Venus, Pisces, Aries, back and forth. And then Neptune goes into Aries first, and then followed by Saturn. Then there's a retrograde. Neptune goes back, followed by Saturn. Well, there's a lot of... I think that when we talk about a fire-water combination, we're talking really about an internal experience, and then an external expression, then an internal experience, and an external expression. And so let yourself breathe with that reality. Now, the thing is that the external world is very, 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 very distracting at this time. It is impossibly, well, all version of it, impossibly distracting. And so you're going to have to figure out what you understand me to mean by internal. Because as someone who, you know, who grew up reading and who, you know, I still spend a lot of time, and this, I highly recommend this book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. If you want to know something about internal, this is a very good book. And I am not a fast reader. And part of why I'm not a fast reader is because when I read, I'm reading like this. Let's put this on the cam, and this is I am underlining. I'm taking notes. I'm paying attention. My reading of a book is a very deeply personal experience. This is what books, not Kindle books, not a thing on a electrical thing that you carry around. I mean, a book. This is a almost 40-year-old copy that I bought my father. It's falling apart. I have a different concept of my interior space because I have grown up on reading books and working one-on-one in person with teachers and mapping out my interior space. That's why I can do the work that I can do. That's why I can take these charts and speak for all 12 signs. And I would encourage you to learn how to map out your interior space. This is really what this is about. And a lot of what's going to happen over the next year is you're going to externalize and embody what is in your interior space. You don't want to avoid the awareness of what is in your interior space. You want to stay close to what is in your interior space. Okay, you following me here? Are we cool? All right, good. All right, let's talk about a couple of other things. Let's go back to this chart. So to recap, we have covered Mars moving back and forth from this interior space of the fourth house into the expressive fifth and back and forth. And four different planets moving back and forth between the even more deeply interior space of the 12th house into the personal embodiment space of the first house. Okay, before we move on from that, when all of this in and out is done, we're talking sometime in 26. I'm going to show you what these charts look like, where we're going in 2026. I'm going to show you this. This is where you're going in 2026. All of this is in Aries. This is on the equinox. Sun, first degree, Neptune, Saturn, Venus is back, the moon is showing up for the fun, and then the conjunction of Eris and Chiron, which we're going to get to in a little while. All this going on in your first house. And all of this remaining in your 12th. But these are mostly quick movers. What remains in the 12th, the slow mover, the one slow mover remaining in the 12th house is the Centaur Nessus. Centaur Nessus. Hold on a second. I just printed something out. I'm going to just look at my pretty chart. I'll be right back in 1 minute. As you may know, I had a beautiful teacher named Betty Dodson, who has kind of is the way shower for a lot of the work that I do around around sexuality. And Betty was a phenomenal artist, and I've been wanting to. I started looking at art auctions. You know, I never asked Betty for a piece of her artwork, and she would have given me one. It never occurred to me to ask her for anything that she personally drew. She, an old calendar, she used to draw. There are these elaborate, beautiful calendars on her desk. But today, I found this. Done in 1968. I mean, this looks like it's out of Da Vinci's notebook. That's how, I mean, it's so beautiful. So I found it at a kind of standard resolution on the internet. We ran it through Topaz. So we AI'd it larger, and then it's like large enough to print 13 by 19. I'm going to get this framed. Betty, I love you. This is Nessus. You know that it's Nessus because it is a centaur carrying a woman. Yeah, it's, there we go. A lot of glare. A centaur carrying a woman. And I sent this to Melanie Reinhardt, and she commented on the expressions on the faces. They're happy. Betty was the only feminist, radical, world-famous, pioneering feminist, not obsessed by rape. One thing that characterizes feminists is that they're obsessed by rape. Betty really was not interested. Betty was interested in love, in sex, masturbation, self-actualization, exploring, consciousness raising. So when we get that drawing, we have a myth. It is a myth where there is some questionable sexual event that happens. By questionable, I mean, was it voluntary? Was it a toll, which is also voluntary to cross a river? Or was it some form of violative sex? And from Old Greek, in the myth, it is left ambiguous. Left ambiguous. Nessus will remain in Pisces for many years. And this is Nessus is ultimately about consequences and one's sense of consequences. Nessus is about one's sense of responsibility. And so it is important to know that you will have Nessus moving through some version of your 12th place. If you're Aries, Sun, Moon, or Rising still, Nessus is in one or more versions of your 12th place. And one of the problems with Nessus is that it can exaggerate the fear of consequences, which is going to be lurking in your 12th place as a kind of an unconscious, not fully brought to awareness thought form. And also, Nessus at its best is understanding that the buck stops with you. It sounds very Republican, you know, personal responsibility. But if you don't think that there's such a thing as personal responsibility, then who the hell is responsible for your existence? I realize you may not think you asked to be born. You may not have asked to be born. But once you are on the physical plane, you can walk around, you can talk, and you can get a credit card, and you can, make a beautiful painting, or you can shoot heroin, or you can make dinner or go drunk driving or, read a book or write a book or burn a book. You've taken on the responsibility of existence. And Nessus is a reminder that the buck stops with you. But it's lurking deep in the background. And I just suggest that you remember all the things about the buck having stopped with you. That you learned in 2024 and 2020, early 2025. Okay, let's talk about the Chiron Eris conjunction. Unlike Saturn-Neptune, well, Saturn-Neptune's happened in Aries four times since 1 BC, and it's never happened on the Aries point. But let's take a look at Let's see if we can find. I may have to. I may have a very, very close approximate chart. There's so many darn charts. Because to map out this time is, okay, this is 26. We're way ahead of ourselves. Okay, let's use this chart. This is a big day for a number of reasons. Let's use this one. So March 30th of this year, Neptune arrives in your sign. This is the chart for May 24th. Neptune arrives in your sign in a month, from what I'm talking. Very big deal. Neptune hasn't been there for like 146 years. So it's an outer planet. Nobody alive remembers it. And yeah, no one alive ever lived. No one lived through Neptune in Aries. And back in the beginning, nobody much wrote about it. It was just it was not considered much of an astrological factor back in that day. Then on May 24th, well, a couple of days ahead of May 24th, Saturn arrives on May 24th. This is one of the biggest turning points in your life. Now, this happened 29 years ago, but that was 29 years ago. And now Saturn arrives in your sign, which means like looking at you, becoming, wanting to become you, wanting you to become it. Conjunct Neptune. So what this to me is about, Saturn and Neptune in a conjunction is about synthesis. I do all these historical charts. I'm feel like sitting back, so I'm going to point my camera down a little bit. Saturn, Neptune, I do these historical charts. And looking at historical charts and also charts for people before I had fully matured into being an astrologer, Saturn-Neptune pairings were very difficult to understand. Because you've got Saturn, which is all about tangible solid substance, and you've got Neptune, which is about liquid and the dissolving of tangible solid substance. So how do you work with that? Well, when you start looking at mundane charts, like things like the hydrogen bomb, or Better Living Through Chemistry, era of the 1950s, you see a lot of Saturn-Neptune combinations. And this is... I finally got a foothold on this pairing, and that is synthesis. It is about synthesizing from old, existing, previously found, known compounds, and maybe some that have not been known, new substances, new compounds, new things that that manifest and express themselves. So there is something about you that is wanting to be synthesized. For as challenging as this astrology is, that is the golden ticket, in a way. That is the path beyond the past into freedom and into something actually new. Actually, genuinely new. Now, soon after that happens, soon after Saturn enters Aries, you can see the 0000. It's in the first degree of Aries. There's no 0th degree. So the instant it's there, you know, what's missing in this chart are the, you know, the arc seconds, which very quickly, this is arc minutes, and then it's like, it's got to be like 0-1. Arc seconds, it's just not displayed, you're in the first degree. And this conjunction perfects, by the way, in early 2026. They're going to dance around, and they're not going to actually fuck until 2026. So it's a little bit of slow tease. Chiron Eris, on the other hand, has been teasing up for a year. This conjunction last happened in 71-72, and because it takes Eris so long to get through Aries, that it last happened in 71-72. I'm studying those charts to get some sense of what this is about. But if you were born in those years, this is very important. You're having your Chiron return at you know in kind of a double Chiron return, because it's a Chiron return with Eris involved. Let's see. We're all pretty much born with Eris and Aries, because it takes Eris 130 years to go through Aries. It gets in like in the early 1920s, and then now it's gone this far. It's taken since the early 1920s out to 2025, 100 years to go this far, and we've got about, 20 more years of Eris in Aries. It's that far, it's that slow. But Chiron goes around once every 50 years. So it showed up when Eris was here in the early 70s, and now it's showing up again when Eris is here in the mid-2020s. So Eris brings a chaos factor with it. And the chaos factor that Eris brings is the history of what's happened to us since radio. It is the history of the tribalizing of the human race, the exteriorization of inner experience, the inner experience of the book, this being a book about an inner experience, the inner experience of the book was unraveled overnight by radio. And radio happens when Eris enters Aries. I don't mean like Marconi wireless radio. I mean like commercial radio going back to stations like WOR, for example, 50,000 watts of public commercial radio tribalize humanity. They de-individuate. Individuation is a factor of the book, of print technology, and radio detribalizes everyone, re-tribalizes people, de-individuates like that. And we get World War II coming out of that. Chiron is profoundly individuating. So Chiron has been in Aries since it started to dip in 2018 was the first time it was there. 2019 was the second time it was there. And so since 2019, it's been clear going across Aries and now it's going to be there in May, May 24th. Umi Abu-Jamal's birthday, by the way. And so when I describe the awakening, that whole 85,000-word project that I did, this is what I'm talking about, is the conjunction of Chiron and Eris in Aries. And so this aspect stretches out from basically spring of 25 into the spring of 26, but has a very wide time orb on it. When we look back, we'll see that, for example, I've got to check the ChatGPT chart, but that's kind of when we were put on notice that the technocrats were trying to steal our souls. They've been trying to, but then we're put on notice. And AI is about nothing more and nothing less than technocrats, meaning Google, Facebook, and all these companies you've never heard of, OpenAI and Palantir and all these companies stealing your soul. That's what that's about. They're drilling in the wall. They're trying to steal the deep, dark secrets of homosexuality from the vault in the LGBTQ center. We're going to find out finally what it's all about. So when you add the combination of Chiron and Eris, that is a radical awakening for everyone. And is especially a radical awakening for you, because it is the awakening. It is coming out of this false tribalism, this false collectivism. It is the deepest individuality meets this collectivization. And it's almost as if all at once the whole process of tribalization is slammed into reverse. for a while, and people get to have some experience of their individuality, of their actual true individual being. I'm so sorry that noise is here for this exciting part, but we could say, oh, what's the symbolism of somebody with a big drill drilling through the wall? Well, there's a breakthrough. There's a breakthrough involved, and this really is about kind of going from one place to the next. So we will invite the Jack of Hearts into the conversation. Where can I stand this up on my little mic stand here? I'll just put that here. I'll just hang that on my nose. Feel the drilling. That's 12th house, first house. 12th house, first house. He's going in from two sides. He's going in from outside the building through the brick. He's going through the inside through all the conventional building materials into the stone and the brick that separates the bank from the outside of the world. This is a moment of awakening, and the awakening is the awakening to the fact that you are a distinct and unique individual. You were born that way. You came here to be that way, and you can see that this has not quite happened yet. The way you can tell what's happening is, we know Chiron moves faster than Eris, 550-year orbit, 50-year orbit, and we see that the number of Chiron is lower than the number of Eris by 5 arc minutes. And then this is the thing that happens next. All of this happens this year and into the next 2 years. So this is why, if you can get some sense without me being hyperbolic about it, why this is so amazing and why there is just so much and why you have so much material to work with. And remember that in the current moment, and you know, in the current equinox chart, the coming equinox chart, there's still the emphasis on the on interior space. And so, you know, my prescription, in a way, if I can become like the astrology pharmacist, is do everything that you can do to cultivate and open up and map out and get some understanding of your inner space, and try not to externalize everything so much. I mean, we are taught over and over again to externalize our reality over and over again. Can't eat a taco without putting it up on Instagram. Gramming your food. I have to tell you that I was, when I heard that that expression, I was disgusted. And what this is, this gramming your food business, is about the inability to have a private interior experience. And experiment with the list of things that give you those private interior experiences, whether it's the honoring the sanctity of your orgasm, or finding places in the woods where you can sit and you have no electronic devices and you have to feel the movement in your mind and the movement in your mind, you know, what is going on inwardly, meditation counts, and to some extent experimenting with entheogenic drugs counts, but those experiences have to be integrated. They have to be integrated. I personally think reading books and writing in a diary is one of the best ways to map out interior space. And I have to say that astrology is a pretty darn good way to map out interior space. All right, I'm going to put this on pause again while our friend Ron is drilling down there. And how do I find the pause button now? How do I find the pause button? The pause button is right here. So I'll be back in a digital instant. Okay. I think they have drilled through the wall, and they will either crack the safe full of diamonds or whatever. All right. So there are other things that are happening. Obviously, we've really only looked at, I mean, and notice, by the way, we're only using the solar chart here. And I want to show you what a small piece of the chart we've even read. And now you're getting a sense of how to read a chart from doing this. These readings are the best instruction in how to read a chart, because I reveal all of my secrets in doing so. We have only read from here to here. We've only covered one-third of the chart. From mid-Cancer to mid-Pisces. We haven't really talked about any of this. But I will tell you... Oh, no, they're back drilling again. This is what it's like living up here. And there's nothing in the LGBTQ center anyone would ever want or need or bother to steal, I promise you. Okay. The most interesting stuff overall is going on up here. And by the way, I cover this chart in detail in The Awakening. I cover it in an audio, and I cover it in writing, and you will get much more of the you'll get other angles. Basically, that's why I do so many readings for each sign. I'm about to do the reckoning readings. The spring readings will be a whole other reading. There's two things I would add. I could sum up these other houses without going into deep analysis. Seventh house, Logos. Make sure that when you are with someone, that you choose a partner, if you have a chance to, that you choose someone who you understand. You choose someone where you've got common language. Common language, very, very, very important and often overlooked. And so to find a common language can take a while to get to know somebody. All right, I'm going to pause again. We're pausing on the topic of the common language, Logos in Libra. I'll be back in a second. I'm so glad there's a pause button on this thing. I'm using OBS now. Really nice program. Back. I think that was it. Hopefully I'm not deceived. So common language. This is often overlooked. Conscious agreements. And if you're with someone now, and the relationship has since begun, oopsie-daisy, the relationship has since begun, it is important that you work out the common language, that you attempt to say the things that you cannot say. Ideas must be put into words, and the assumptions of understanding let go of. I'm going to pause again. So what I'm getting at is that most of the time we think we have an understanding with people, oh, for God's sake. All right, I'm going to stop until the guy's actually packed up his shit and left. So hold on, I'm going to put us on pause yet again. Ah. We're back. So it turns out that the... drill bit was stuck on the wall. Took a little time to get it out. Where were we? Not making assumptions in relationships or talking through your assumptions. Any therapist should tell you how to do this, suggest it. I'll remind you that it's possible. Logos. Logos in the seventh house. Next. That's unusual. This shaft of light coming in from somewhere. I'm going to do this. Always, if I get in front of it, the constant tension between natural and artificial light. You've heard my references to the Family Hunger Games group. That's here, always marked with a red bar. This is a persistent, slow-moving placement, moving through your 10th house. 10th house, equally family-oriented as the 4th. 10th house, family. 4th house, family. And the Hunger Games aspect, which is associated with alcohol. You'll know that you're there because there's something about alcohol. You are being called upon to do family of origin work. That's going to be there. It's trying to get your attention. Read some books. Find somebody to work with. The best book about family of origin issues that I know of is called General Theory of Love. A General Theory of Love. That will clarify many things for you and disabuse you of the notion of karma, which may exist, but karma has other manifestations. Last but not least, okay, I'm making a nice little shadow here. Pluto in the 11th house. Couple of things come up here. One of which is, make sure you know who your friends are. The second thing is, your friends are not the people who try to force you to doing anything. We are going to be living through many, many experiences over the next 20 years of 19 years of Pluto and Aquarius. That compel us to summon the kind of individuality that you will be building over the next couple of years. All of this Aries astrology and the Aries-Pisces blend is encouraging you to be highly self-aware. And that means not allowing yourself to be pressured or bullied by groups, including your friends, your family, your colleagues, and society generally. We're now on the 5-year anniversary of what I call the C word or the V word. I realize there's another C word and another V word, but I'm talking about the C word that became very famous in 2020 and the V word that became very famous in 2020. That was one mass bullying. And a lot of people didn't survive. And the reason they did not survive had nothing to do with the V or the C. It had to do with mitigation measures. We're doing the, you're going to do what we say for your own good. You simply must grow enough to make up your own mind and be mature enough to know when you're not making up your own mind. Because it's easy to think, oh, well, I'm such an independent person. And then it turns out that, maybe not totally quite exactly. Okay? So there's a reason that you are maturing. There's a reason that you are individuating. There is a reason that you are self-actualizing. Now, and the reason is it's time. And you need to, for you, and you are also a kind of an emissary for the world to set an example, a model of truly being yourself and standing uncompromisingly in your truth. So that is most of what I have to say to you today. There will be more. There is more in the Aries Awakening. It's a beautiful 6,000-word written reading, printable, with audio. I've gone back to video now that I've invented the chart cam and gotten like a kind of nice-looking little set here and got some proper lights and a good program. So I'm going to do a lot more video. Those are all available. Your 2024 reading should be on this page. I suggest you review that and, see if what I said a year ago was relevant to where you are today. And you can make some adjustments based on, what I said today, did what I say today really make sense? Making the same mistake twice or something like that. And I would strongly encourage, and we'll be doing a video on this book soon. Because if there's one book that ever is the embodiment of your astrology right now, this 12th house, first house thing, it is this exploration of someone, and part of the story is about recovering from very, very deep mental illness. And so it is something of a book for our moment. It's at its Chiron return. This thing came out just after the last conjunction of Chiron and Eris. Being written, he was deep into writing it during the conjunction of Chiron and Eris. Okay, I will leave you on that note. I'm easily found at efc@planetwaves.net. Write to me a couple of times. If I don't answer, don't worry. I'm not going to think you're annoying. I do personal consultations. I do chart key readings that are a recorded reading of your chart. I do in person, like on the phone and Zoom consultation. If you've worked with me before, you're welcome to meet me in this room, in the next room in Kingston. And thank you for your business and for your trust. And I will leave you on that note. The drilling in the wall has finally stopped. I wanted it to be kind of calm and quiet when I said thank you. And bye for now.